I don't know about you, but personally, the whole festive holiday thing seems to be falling a bit flat this year. I mean, don't get me wrong, like every other year, I do plan to really go to town on a pumpkin pie or two. But this year, the annual deluge of Black Friday ads egging us on to higher levels of consumption with corresponding carbon emissions and solid and liquid waste seem particularly hollow, morbid, predatory even. Falling as Black Friday did this year on November 29th, the date the UN first recognized in 1977 as the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. This year, all the excess, the forced pageantry, and planned obsolescence of Black Friday seems in such stark and ironic contrast to the poverty in Gaza. Winter's coming to Gaza, where hundreds of thousands of shell-shocked people are struggling against all odds to care for themselves and their families. From infants to elders and recent amputees on crutches and in wheelchairs, as well as people with other disabilities, eking out lives in the streets, tents, and precarious ruins of shelled-out apartments. In The Guardian, Camille Ahmed and Ana Lucia Gonzalez Paz describe Gaza as a sonic hellscape, filled variously with, quote, incessant buzzing of drones and more violent intrusions, Israeli missile strikes, sirens, gunfire, and the screams of frightened people, unquote. And the situation is unlikely to get better under Herr Trump. The man who, as president, moved the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem stands to personally profit from, as reported in The Guardian, investment his son-in-law Jared Kushner has in the removal of Palestinians from Gaza and the development of Gaza as an Israeli waterfront resort. And no doubt Trump is also aware of the profits to be had from exploiting Gaza's offshore marine gas fields. But if Jewish-led protests at the Thanksgiving Day parade in New York City, and more recently in the Canadian Parliament, are anything to go by, solidarity actions against the unfolding genocide in Gaza are likely to continue to build in the run-up to Hanukkah and the January inauguration. But in the lead-up to the lighting of the White House Christmas tree, Joe Biden seems as willing as ever to continue the seemingly limitless supply of U.S. weapons to help annihilate Gaza. I'm just speculating here, so please, sir, do not put me to the dunking stool. But Jesus himself might have been first to observe that giving birth in a manger sounds pretty idyllic right now to women in Gaza weakened by hunger. Giving birth in the rubble of buildings that used to be apartments, universities, and hospitals. No sterile sheets, no antiseptic, nothing to dull the pain, nothing to stop the next forced removal, the next relocation, the Palestinian Trail of Tears. The links between Native American and Palestinian experience being so many and so obvious, it seems fitting that the International Day of Solidarity with Palestinian people follows so closely on the heels of Thanksgiving. That annual rite of colonial simulacra on such a spectacular national level that Walt Disney himself might have been proud to call it his brainchild. We're talking about a holiday that begins indoctrinating American schoolchildren from kindergarten onward into a history that never was. And for all of you teachers out there, I'd be remiss for not noting that for decades, Rethinking Schools and the Zinn Education Project have been developing K-12 curriculum that centers Native voices, culture, and history, and goes a long way toward puncturing those myths. Still, far too many Americans remain unaware of the fact that since 1970, the fourth Thursday in November also has been recognized as a national day of mourning, heralding as it does the arrival of settlers bent on claiming the land as their own. In the pithy words of the late 19th century colonial hymn, "From sea to shining sea." Today we hear the echo of that much celebrated American phrase in Netanyahu's and the Likud party's longstanding vision of a Jewish state purged of Palestinians, one that extends, quote, between the sea and the Jordan River, unquote. Accumulation by dispossession is how Marxist geographer David Harvey describes the logic of capitalism, which is inextricably linked to colonialism. Throughout history, indigenous people from Palestine to the U.S. have been on the front lines of dispossession and removal, their lands drowned or exploited for hydropower or contaminated in service of the empire, whether by mine tailings and nuclear waste or bombs, bullets, or other forms of military ordnance. And the same hard-hit communities are now on the front lines of climate collapse, disproportionately hit by rising sea levels, by typhoons, hurricanes, tornadoes, and other extreme weather events. What was it anyway that Martin Luther King Jr. said in his 1967 Riverside Church speech about the triple evils of militarism, racism, and materialism, and how they intersect? And would he be surprised today by products moving at the speed of light? Millions of us wrapping our arms daily around boxes that many contend are stamped with the image of Jeff Bezos, male member. What would MLK have said about Bill Gates injecting markets and mines into the Democratic Republic of Congo, about corporations and militaries jonesing after cobalt, after tantalum, after tin, tungsten, uranium, and gold, after debts and interest, after the bodies of children, bodies of water, bodies of workers wearing flip-flops into mines? The world has no shortage of political prisoners or of environmental martyrs and heroes. But 80-year-old Leonard Peltier, a Lakota and Anishinaabe AIM member, is arguably the most famous. The legal lynching he underwent so outrageous and his incarceration in a maximum security prison so protracted. Even former FBI agents have themselves essentially contended that Peltier was scapegoated by the FBI for the lethal shooting of two agents, Jack Kohler and Ronald Williams, on the Pine Ridge Reservation. Michael Apted's 1992 documentary Incident at Oglala, narrated by Robert Redford, is a good place to start if you're new to this history. But if you're looking for insights into the role that uranium mining played in the conflict, you'd be better off checking out Peter Mathiasen's book, In the Spirit of Crazy Horse, Leonard Peltier and the FBI's War on the American Indian Movement. For a firsthand account of Peltier's life, check out his memoir, Prison Writings, My Life is My Sundance. Despite well-documented prosecutorial misconduct, powerfully depicted in Apted's documentary, Peltier's conviction has yet to be overturned. And in the face of decades of global high-profile pleas for clemency for Peltier, including by James Reynolds, a senior U.S. attorney who was involved in his prosecution, no president up until now has been willing to free Peltier. Given that he's in increasingly poor health, time is running out, and the same president who just pardoned his own son may be Peltier's last shot at clemency. If you've not done so, check out the Amnesty International petition, as well as Amy Goodman and Dennis Moynihan's recent column making the case for his release. The Red Nation Media Collective also has an extensive playlist of podcasts focused on Peltier's case and the long struggle to free him. So this holiday season, be sure to take a few minutes to join your voice to the chorus of voices calling for Leonard Peltier to be freed at last. This has been Desiree Helligers for the Omaha Variety Hour.
I thank God for all the outlaws that went and did the world some good. This old world could use good trouble. We ought to do as Leonard would. We have broken every treaty, disavowed them from the start, causing hardship with indifference and a cage around our hearts. We write doctrines of injustice, which we sanctify as law. We incarcerate their warriors for doing right. They take the fall. In a run-down Florida prison, Leonard Peltier's doing time. 45 long years and counting, though he's guilty of an old familiar story. Truth against the FBI. Locked up warrior lives his Sundance. Little Sam's called in alive. I thank God for all to do as Leonard Bird. Defiled their sacred mountains, chiseled faces in the stone. Our belligerent dead presidents ever looming o'er their home. When their youth rose up in protest and demanded dignity, Uncle Sam took aim on groundless blame, sneering with impunity. Nowadays, Sam's building pipelines to contaminate our wells. He's got legal aid from billionaires and a lot of gas to sell. But courageous folks like Leonard put their freedom on the line, guided by the